The Rebel Capitalist Show, episode 161.
Welcome to the podcast that helps you build wealth and thrive in a world of out-of-control central banks and big governments. This is the Rebel Capitalist Show.
Hi guys, welcome to this evening's live stream. I'm right here in Phoenix, was in Vegas this weekend. Boy, oh boy, it's getting crazy out there. It's, man, I tell you what, it's, I'm frustrated to say the least, my friends. I'm really frustrated. Maybe we'll get into it here in some of the questions, but I'm sure we'll probably get into it. But that you guys aren't here to hear me vent and rant on. You're here to have me answer your questions. So that's exactly what I intend to do. And I intend to make this as productive as possible, regardless of how annoyed and pissed off I am as a result of having to wear these stupid masks everywhere. But anyway, all right, let's get into it, guys. And as always, I'd like to remind you to go to Rebel Capitalist Pro. Check it out. That is the online platform I have for investing so you can build wealth and thrive in this world of out-of-control central banks and definitely big governments, from what I've seen just being in Las Vegas over this past weekend. Huge governments. That is an understatement. You can check that out at georgegammon.com/pro. So let's dive into the questions. We've got Daniel, looks like, first. Has YouTube met your expectations after creating content for over a year? And how would you compare digital assets to something like a retail business or real estate? So it's far exceeded my expectations, Daniel. My goal for the channel after a year was to have 10,000 subscribers. So after 8 months or so, I had 100,000. And I don't know how much I had after a year, but it was way more than 10,000. So it's exceeded every expectation I could have possibly had. And it's not just the subscriber count. I mean, the people that I've had the opportunity to talk with on the Rebel Capitalist Show and just the Rebel Capitalist Pro. I mean, being able to partner with just brilliant people like Lynn Alden and Chris McIntosh, it's really an honor. And I never thought it would come to this, but it has. And I'm just loving every minute of it. I wish that people around us would see the insanity in the world right now. But unfortunately, they're not. It's just getting more and more insane. And even back in 2019, when I started the channel and I was talking about this stuff and talking about how dangerous big governments were, everyone says, oh, George, tinfoil hat, and you're just fear-mongering and blah, 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 blah. And now, I mean, look at this, that the government is totally trying to control our lives in a way that's utterly ridiculous. No matter how fantastic you think masks are, and that's not even, you know, whatever, it's fine, that's totally up to you. I'm not here to say they're great. I'm not here to say they're bad. I'm here to say that you should be left to your own decision making as to whether or not you want to wear one. It should not be mandatory by the government, and businesses should be able to choose. But just think about how insane it is that you have to go into a restaurant. This is my whole experience in Vegas. You go into a restaurant, and you sit down at your table and you don't have to wear a mask. But then as soon as you stand up and go to the restroom, now all of a sudden you have to wear a mask. Just even if you think masks are fantastic, ask you, how much sense does that make? Zero. None. It makes absolutely no sense. So then it comes to you got to ask yourself the question, well, why are they doing this? If it's not preventing anything, then why do it? The only conclusion I can come to is that's because they want to condition you into just being a lemming and just walking around like a zombie and just doing whatever the government tells you to do. It's you're delegating your thinking to the government, and they want to condition you to just do drugs and opiates, and every single corner has a dispensary. And I'm all for drugs being legal. But the push now is for you to just numb your mind. It's the greatest asset God gave you. It's your mind. It's your mind. And I go to Vegas and people are just destroying it nonstop through the use of drugs. and they can't even, they just numb themselves, and then they delegate all the thinking to the government. And it's just getting insane. But anyway, I don't know how I got, I know how I got off on that tangent, because I'm just pissed at this stuff. Getting this Vegas is a nightmare. It's I can't, it's a town that I used to enjoy going to so often, and it's just ruined. It's just for what? And people have to understand. Here, I'll go off on this rant, then I'll go back to the questions. That if you're someone that believes that we should be able to make our own decisions, I think people are framing the argument wrong, because you've got one side that says we should be in full lockdown. We should not be allowed to leave the house. We need to just lock down for 6 weeks. And we just need to thank goodness we have our overlords and the government controlling us to the degree that we can be safe and we don't have to worry about the virus, because, you know, the government is so powerful and so knowing and so knowledgeable that all I have to do is stay in my house and they can just give me these stimulus checks and we can get rid of the virus. So you have that one argument. Okay, fine. Then you have the other argument saying that, okay, we don't like that approach. We want more of a liberty. We should be able to make our own decisions. But the argument isn't being framed well at all. They're saying either COVID doesn't exist, or they're just saying, oh, it's not that bad. Okay, fine. But that's not a good way to argue the other side. What you have to do is you have to, people need to realize that just taking the government's numbers for what they are, right? The question isn't, if we're going to have a million deaths, what can we do to have 500,000? That's not an option. That's not an option. Zero option. And people don't understand that. The only option is, do you have a million deaths now or in the future? Because you're going to have them. That's it. You're going to have them. So obviously, I'm not assuming that you are the hospital capacity isn't overwhelmed. And then you say, well, we could get a vaccine. You lower the amount of cases out there. You lower the amount of people that get it. Then we get a vaccine. You lower the deaths. Okay, fine. What if we don't get a vaccine? We don't have a vaccine for HIV. We don't have a vaccine for the common cold. So what do? We just go the next 20 years under full lockdown? How many people lose their lives? So when you think about it in those terms, you have to ask yourself, it's not about, there isn't an option where we go from a million people dead to 500,000. That's off the table. The only option is, do you rip the Band-Aid off and have a million people get it and get the herd immunity, and then you're done. Then you keep going. I think that's what we have to think through as far as the intellectual debate. And I'm not here to say that one is right or one is wrong. I'm saying that the debate is wrong. People aren't understanding the options. They're thinking as though there's this option where we kill a million people, okay? That no mask, you know, you kill a million people, okay, fine, we get it. And then the other option is we only kill 100,000, but we have to go into lockdown for 6 weeks. That's not an option, guys. It's not an option. When you're dealing with something like this, it's going to go through. It's going to get as many people as it's going to get. You're not going to stop it. You're just going to prolong it until we get the herd immunity. So anyway, I know you guys aren't here to hear me rant on about that, but I just really think that the argument should be completely reframed to where we're talking about facts. We're not talking about feelings. We're not talking about what makes you feel good. We're talking about the actual facts. And that is that you're not going to slow this down, or you're not going to reduce the number of deaths by slowing it down, unless we're talking about hospital capacity. That's a completely separate topic. Or you say we get a vaccine, but then you have to use a cost benefit analysis by saying, okay, how long is it going to take to get that vaccine? And if we don't get it, then what? Then how much economic damage do you do? And if you do that much economic damage, how many millions and millions and millions of people die as a result of the unemployment rate going to 15 to 20 to 25 to 30%? You see, there's no cost benefit analysis here. There's no thinking whatsoever. All we're doing as a society is feeling. And it's just driving me crazy. All right, let's see here. So digital assets, they're fantastic if you know what you're doing. And I think they're just as good as a retail business. I think they're way better than a retail business. As far as real estate, I like real estate quite a bit because you can make a lot of money on the buy side. And the digital assets are tough because you got to put in a lot of work. Most people don't understand how much work it takes me to do just like a 20-minute video. That's like 2 days of work. It's like one complete day of shooting and editing. And that's without me having to do any research if I don't know the topic, you know, like the back, if I don't know the topic well enough to teach it. So, but yeah, I mean, if you look at all the things combined, as far as your barrier to entry, which is relatively low, depending on what you're doing, it's just, I think it makes all the sense in the world. Okay, wouldn't gold producers want to downsize their mining operations to inflate the price of gold, which in turn yields them a higher profit? Well, I mean, you just got to do the math. You've got to say, okay, am I going to make more money if I sell 100 units of gold at making a dollar a unit, or am I going to make more selling 50 units at $1.50 or $1.25? You know, it's just a math game. I don't know that they purpose it. And then how do you control that for the other operators that would flood the market with the gold when you're, it's not like OPEC. So yeah, I just let the free market work. Let's just, no, I don't think that you would have to worry about that too much. How do you handle the personal emotions of feeling always cynical of company, governments, media motives, and being branded a conspiracy theorist? A great question after I just ranted on about the Cerveza sickness and how insane these lockdowns are, forcing people to wear masks when they're outside 300 yards away from the nearest person, and then forcing them to wear a mask when they're not wearing a mask. Listen, I'm on the plane coming back, and this mask that they gave me, I've got a big head. I'm like Beavis and Butthead. My head's like 10 times bigger than my entire torso. So the mask doesn't fit it doesn't go all the way up my nose. I've got to jam it up my chin like this, right? So when I'm sitting there trying to sleep on the plane all the way back, the thing just gradually comes down to where it's like right here. I sleep for 5 minutes every single time. The stewardess gal knocks me on the shoulder. Sir, 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 put it over your nose, put it over your nose. Meanwhile, the guy right next to me isn't wearing a mask the entire trip because he's downing shots of vodka the whole time. So tell me how that makes sense. On any planet, it doesn't make any sense. That's the bottom line. They're just trying to condition you to not think for yourself. Regardless of how great you think masks are, at no point can any rational human being say that one person should have one over their nose while the other guy's downing shots of vodka with no mask the whole flight. Or while you're sitting at a dinner table, you're somehow immune to the Cerveza sickness, but oh my gosh, when you stand up and walk to the bathroom, now you can transmit it to the whole restaurant. No one can argue for that on any rational basis, no matter how epic or how awesome you think masks are. Jeez. All right. So how do I handle the emotions? I don't know. I mean, one thing that helps is just being able to do these whiteboard videos, because then it lets me argue my side of it. And so, you know, you can sit there and call me a conspiracy theorist or say that I'm fear-mongering because I say that the U.S. economy is completely unsustainable and it's built on a foundation of sand. Now, if I just come out and say that, well, I'm not really backing it up with any facts. It's just kind of my opinion. And I don't like to do that. But when I go through a half hour whiteboard video, you know, when I go through a whiteboard video like this, where I've got everything up on the board and I walk through it, I go through the charts, I go through the data, I go through the facts, and I'm not just out there saying, hey, I think the U.S. economy is, you know, a house of cards. I'm not just saying that. I'm showing you step by step by step by step why I think that. And then it helps me kind of argue my position and get it off my chest So if I do have people like the BBC or Klaus or Bigglesworth or whatever that tries to throw me under the bus, or the trolls on Twitter, I don't care. I don't care, because the only thing they ever do is they just attack me. They never attack my ideas, ever. You notice if you're in the comments of my YouTube videos, and I don't get the chance to read too many of them, but every once in a while I'll read one where there's a troll guy in there, like the MMT troll guy or the socialist troll guy, and they're sitting there and they say, "Oh, George, you're wrong." I always respond by saying, "Tell me specifically what was wrong about that video. Don't just blanket statement you're wrong. That doesn't do anything. You didn't even have to watch the video to write that comment. Tell me specifically where I'm wrong, and then tell me the facts that back up your position." But you see, none of the troll guys do that, ever, ever, ever. The BBC doesn't do that. Klaus doesn't do that. Bigglesworth, they never do it, never. Why? Because they don't have facts. All they have are feelings. That's it. It goes back to this whole stupid mask thing. But yeah, anyway, sometimes it's just therapeutic for me to get out there. I really enjoy the whiteboard videos and kind of arguing my position and stance on things. And I like talking to people about it. And I even like talking to people that disagree with me. You know, let's not forget, that's what the troll guys forget as well, that I talked to Richard Wolf, who actually, I really like Richard. He's a cool dude. He was really nice to me back and forth in emails. And, you know, he's a very famous Marxist. And I'd love to talk to Richard again. I like to talk to anyone who's just intellectually curious and also intellectually honest. Because someone like Richard, he might not agree with me, but he's going to tell me why he doesn't agree with me, and specifically, and then he's going to give me his data points. He's not just going to be like troll guy, come out and say, "Oh, you're wrong. Oh, you're a tinfoil hat." You know, that doesn't do anybody any good. You can tell those people aren't intellectually honest at all. They've got some political narrative that's been beaten into their head for the last 45 years, and they're just going to regurgitate it just like a zombie lemming walking off the cliff. Okay, Matt is asking if I have any investments in silver. No, I don't, Matt, but I like silver. I like it a lot. I just haven't really had time to do any homework, and I've been in Phoenix trying to help out a family member that's got a couple health issues. So I just, between that and the YouTube channel, I haven't had time, but I like silver. But that's a good question, Matt, because I like to clarify that I don't know that I see silver as insurance. I see it as a different asset class than gold. I like gold as insurance, but I like silver more as a speculation. Just, I see them as two different things. In my mind, silver more competes with Bitcoin than it does gold.
This podcast is brought to you by Rebel Capitalist Pro, the best online investing research. I have teamed up with Chris McIntosh and Lynn Alden, two of the best in the business, to create Rebel Capitalist Pro and give you the tools you need to build wealth and thrive in this crazy world of economic insanity. Rebel Capitalist Pro is jam-packed with Chris and Lynn's incredible research. We have live stream Q&As where you can ask your questions directly to Chris, Lynn, and myself. And the best of all, there's an online member forum which allows you to network, learn, and explore ideas with like-minded individuals. What are you waiting for? Check out Rebel Capitalist Pro right now at georgegammon.com/pro. That's georgegammon.com/pro. Take action today and do something your future self will thank you for.
Okay, I know you've bought and sold diesel trucks in the past. Do you have any recommendations for low capital commodities to buy and sell? Other than the diesel trucks, Mark, not that are just kind of like, oh yeah, I do, Airstreams. Yeah, yeah, yeah. If you're someone who's handy and like you know a little bit about construction, and if you can go around and find like a super cheap Airstream on Craigslist, like from the 60s, the 70s, you know, something like that, and one of the iconic ones, and you got to do your homework because some sizes are really popular and then some sizes not so much. It seems with Airstreams, the smaller they are, the more popular, because you can tow them with a like an F-150. You don't have to have like a big F-350 or a Power Stroke or a diesel. You can tow with a smaller vehicle is my point. So like, what are the Bambis, those Bambis, man? If you could get your hands on a Bambi that like had some sort of damage by a tree falling on it, or you know, something where you could do the work, just like a house, you get it, it's kind of beat up, do the work, build the equity, flip it on Craigslist or flip it on eBay. And right now, especially with the Cerveza sickness, I mean, use the insanity to your advantage, right? Why not profit from the insanity? So I think those Airstreams are going to be increasingly more popular, and that's going to be kind of a store of a value thing too. And also too, if you buy an Airstream and you remodel it, then you can just park it in your driveway and Airbnb it. And you've got, you can instantly cash flow it, where the trucks, you can't necessarily cash flow them. So I really like those Airstreams. I started buying them about 3 years ago or something like that. I was in Tucson helping out my younger brother because he had some health issues. So I was there for the entire year. He had some severe allergies. So I didn't have anything to do. So that's why I was doing some of those. Well, it's a long story, but that's why I bought a bunch of Airstreams. That's an interesting question. Joe Biden. Hey, Joe's always in the comments here. In your experience, why do some people get to be multimillionaires but fail to become billionaires? Well, I mean, there's obvious reasons that it's as you go up, it's tougher. It gets a lot harder to do that. And what's interesting is it's very tough to keep your money. Most people think it's the hardest part is making it. That's not the hardest part. The hardest part is keeping it. So then you take in how hard is it to compound it exponentially, which is what you'd have to do to become a billionaire. That's really tough. But you know, probably the hardest thing is right here. And that's what makes me so frustrated when I go to Vegas and I see all the young people just stoned out of their mind, just walking around stoned with masks on and just, man. And again, I'm all for legalizing drugs. But you do it while you do all these other things, and it's just a recipe for disaster. So anyway, my point is you've got to really have the ambition gene needs to run very strong in your bloodstream. Because think about it. I mean, you get up to 20, 50 million, 100 million, and your life really doesn't change at all. It doesn't. You got pretty much everything you need. You can fly private. I mean, what else is there? Sure, you could buy a bigger boat, a bigger jet, but it doesn't really change much your life. And you've got pretty much all the freedom you could possibly want. But so what is what's the motivator? Like, what's the drive to work to continue to work 16 hours a day when you're in your 50s and your 60s trying to get from 250 million up to 2 billion or 3 billion. You got to be a rare person. And it's a mental game, really. You have to not really care about the money. You at that point, you got to just be one of those people that just likes to kick ass. And you're just going to go out and you every day, you're like Ricky Bobby. You just every morning you wake up and piss excellence. It sounds funny, but it's true. You got to just wake up. I mean, think about everyone on this live stream. If you had $50 million in the bank right now, what would you do? Oh, I'd go to St. Bart's and hang out with Hugh, and I'd go drink and on the beach and do all these things. You know, how many people would say 50? Oh, I'd work 80 hours a week for the next 10 years trying to multiply it to a billion. You know, very few people would. Why did I choose an AMG GTS, by the way? Not a GT, a GTS. The GTS does have an extra, what is it? I think an extra 50 horsepower. I'm not sure, but the GTS has a bit more horsepower than the GT. As far as why that compared to the 911 GT2 or the Aston Martin, because I've had the Porsche, I've had the Aston. And I've never had the Mercedes AMG. So I've had a DB9 and it was garbage. And I've had a couple of 911s that are fantastic cars, But I just never had it, so I just kind of wanted to mix it up. Okay, so Bren, you're kind of, I appreciate the what you're saying as far as giving me the details, but I can't give you specific investment advice. I would join Rebel Capital as pro. I hate to plug my own thing, but that's probably would be the best use of $97 a month or whatever it is. But you want to diversify, yeah, but I mean, commodity, you got to understand portfolio construction, Brandon. You got to understand that. It's not just about what's the smartest thing to buy because I think it's going up in price. It's a whole portfolio. It's a whole strategy. So make sure you're thinking that through. Yeah, I see what you're doing. You want to diversify. Yeah, but again, you want to diversify into 10-80-10. If it were me, I can't give you specific advice. But if it were me, I'd look at my current portfolio and try to figure out how I could set up that 10-80-10 with the multifamily that you have, assuming that those are throwing off good cash flow. How would you recommend to prepare our children in the best way possible coming problems due to the economic reset, globalist agenda? Wow, that's a great question. And handling money. I don't have kids, so it's hard for me. I don't want to pretend to be an expert where I'm not. I'm trying to think through if I had a kid right now, I don't know if I'd raise them in the United States. Man, I would. There's no way I would let them go to a public school. No chance. Zero. Even if I was an atheist, I would not allow them to go to a public school because I don't want my kid being brainwashed with this SJW nonsense, this victim mentality, this lemming type of approach to where you're delegating your thinking to the government at all times. And I don't want my kid within 500 miles of that. So I would try to find a great, whether it's a Christian school, a charter school, something like that, where they're not teaching them this craziness. Obviously, if you can, you try to homeschool them. It's not an option for everyone. But I think if it were me, I would consider raising my kids somewhere else. Just somewhere that had values that were more aligned with the values I had and with my community, or the values my community had and the values my church had the values my parents had growing up as a kid. And those values, I do not see them present here in the United States, at least not from the government, from the people on my channel and a lot of great people out there and a lot of awesome Americans. I see it there all the time, but not from the school systems, not from the media, and not from the government. As the Fed buys sausages, mortgage-backed securities, hasn't the central bank generated fugazis for the loan? Yep, they have. So via the central banks, the Fed is generating currency units in the real economy, leading to inflation. Let's see. Not really, because it's just QE. It's the same thing with treasuries. So if they're doing that with the banking system, that isn't really creating more deposits in the commercial banking system. So the bank goes out there, they buy they buy the mortgage-backed securities. Now, can they use bank reserves? Can they use cash? Who knows? That's really the big question that everyone's trying to figure out. But let's just say they use bank reserves to buy those mortgage-backed securities from, we'll call it Fannie and Freddie. And that goes onto the bank's balance sheet. And the Fed comes in and says, hey, we want to buy those mortgage-backed securities. They just do an asset swap. They trade the mortgage-backed securities for more bank reserves. What happens to the deposits in the commercial banking system? Zero. Doesn't go up. It's all just the financial economy. That's why when I've been doing these whiteboard videos with QE, see, I'm trying to do that in more of my videos where I draw that distinct black line between the real economy and the financial economy, because I really want to try to encourage people to get in that mindset where you're seeing them as just where you're compartmentalizing the two. And so when you're trying to think through inflation or deflation, you're just getting hyper focused on the real economy bucket, and you're not really getting too caught up in the weeds with the financial economy bucket. And I that's kind of the biggest mistake. People just run around in circles chasing their tail. And just they just end up in a worse place than when they began, when they tried to figure it out in the first place, because it gets so complex when you're dealing with all this stuff in the financial economy, with the Fed's balance sheet, the bank's balance sheets, the bank reserves, what they can use them for, what they can't, because it brings the Federal Reserve Act into play. You have to start trying to interpret the Federal Reserve Act on your own. It's a that's one hell of a rabbit hole. So I think for the average Joe and Jane, if they just compartmentalize the real economy, focus on does action A, B, or C affect the commercial, the deposits in the commercial banking system? If that increases, okay, well, now you got more currency units chasing the same amount of goods and services. Now you focus on velocity. If it doesn't, well, then it might not be that act in and of itself. Now, there could be a knock-on effect, but in and of itself, it doesn't create an environment that would lead to a lot of inflation without velocity increasing substantially. Wow. So Jackie's asking, what career do you consider safe during an economic downturn? None, Jackie. None. There are no safe careers. In fact, even when we're not in an economic downturn, there are no safe careers because you're working for someone else. The only quote unquote safe career is when you're working for yourself. That's it. And even that isn't completely safe, but it shouldn't be. I mean, think about this. We're imperfect creatures living in an imperfect world. The idea that we need something safe and secure, that's kind of a bizarre, I mean, I get it. I totally get it. But if you think about the world and that we live in it, it's that's impossible. That's impossible. We don't know what's going to happen tomorrow morning. I could wake up, walk right across the street to the gym and get hit by a bus. There's just all these variables that you just can't control. And I understand we like security, but we've got to understand at a certain point, there is no security. We can't secure everything. There's risk in everything we do. Back to the masks. There's risks in everything. And it's just a simple cost, not a simple, but it's a cost benefit analysis. What we like to, whether people are on the right, on the left, whatever they're debating, the Keynesians, the Austrians, we're all guilty of it, is that you when you're trying to argue something, you only consider the costs. Or if you're trying to argue something else, you only consider the benefits. And then the other side just argues the opposite. You know, if you're arguing the cost, then they're arguing the benefits or vice versa. And you just go back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. No one ever gets anywhere. That, you know, that's why whenever I'm trying to, if I'm thinking through my argument, I always try to argue the other side better. I really do this. My objective is to be able to argue the other side better than they can. And that's where you really hone in on where truth is, because it's always various shades of gray. It's very rarely black and white. But anyway, my point is that you know, the more you can work for yourself, I think the safer it is, regardless of whether or not we're going into an economic downturn or not, even in a booming economy. But we got to keep in mind that there is nothing that's completely safe, and we just live in an unsafe world. It's unpredictable. Oh, let's see, in your personal business endeavors, what's worked for you when you decide to hire someone and then you decide to complete the task yourself? Oh, yeah, that's never a good sign, Vinny. I mean, you're preaching to the choir. I mean, oh, my gosh, I can relate to that on so many levels. You don't even know, buddy. You don't even know. But you have to make people accountable. And I think if I had to give you some advice, Vinny, because it sounds like you've got a business, maybe you're a small business owner, I would suggest taking more time to hire people and taking less time to fire them. You do the opposite. You hire people right away because it's, oh, I like that person. Great. Just hire them. Let's go. And then you got to train them for months and months and months. And you see all these red flags, and then you avoid trying to fire them. And it just turns into this nightmare situation. Where if you just hold off, be more patient, try to interview more people, be more demanding of the people you hire up front. And then if you start seeing some red flags after about 2 weeks, done, fire them, get them out. It's going to be better for them and better for you in the long run. Yeah, right. Question, it says, George, you forgot politics as a safe career. Yeah, good point. especially when we're going into this Atlas shrugged type of world. Yeah, the safest job to have as a politician. Yeah, no kidding. Or being head of the World Economic Forum. Yeah, so I don't want to spend too much time on this, but about me selling merchandise and stuff. I've got Sebastian kind of looking into it. We might do it. I've got a ton of people asking me for it. It's just kind of, we might do it. I mean, you can't really make any money on that stuff or relatively. I know a lot of YouTubers make a good amount of money for them on that, but it's not a real good use of my time. But I understand that people like it. So I've got Sebastian looking into it. If he can do it on his own where I don't have to get involved, we'll do it. Yeah, so the Dragon portfolio with 100 grand or really whatever you have, it's the easiest way to think about it. It's just 20% for each. So you got 20% for gold, 20% for equities, 20% bonds, 20% long vol, and 20% commodity trend.
This podcast is brought to you by Rebel Capitalist Pro, the best online investing research. I have teamed up with Chris McIntosh and Lynn Alden, two of the best in the business, to create Rebel Capitalist Pro and give you the tools you need to build wealth and thrive in this crazy world of economic insanity. Rebel Capitalist Pro is jam-packed with Chris and Lynn's incredible research. We have live stream Q&As where you can ask your questions directly to Chris, Lynn, and myself. And the best of all, there's an online member forum which allows you to network, learn, and explore ideas with like-minded individuals. What are you waiting for? Check out Rebel Capitalist Pro right now at georgegammon.com/pro. That's georgegammon.com/pro. Take action today and do something your future self will thank you for.
Are we about to see velocity go up? That's a really interesting question. I think you've got to go back and look at velocity in the past and ask yourself why it went up and why it went down, if it did. So I don't want to get too out in the weeds on this one, but when you're looking at velocity, you have to understand that velocity is a very simple equation. All it is just GDP divided by money supply, M2. That's the main metric, or that's the main equation there for velocity. It's really a question about how's nominal GDP increasing. So you saw it go up in the 90s. So, but going back to my original point, I'm just thinking this through. If you get money supply wrong, then your whole equation is going to be off. You don't know anything about velocity. And it takes me back to a conversation I had with Jeff Snyder a few months ago, where I was asking him about velocity and money supply. And he's like, listen, if you don't know M2, then how are you going to know velocity? Velocity is going to be wrong if M2 is. And of course, Jeff's whole point is the central bank, they don't know what M2, they can't even define money, let alone tell you how many currency units are out there. And then what is money? Jeff really articulates it 10 times better than I can. But I don't know if you saw that one video I did a few months ago, but I kind of played around with the idea that Milton Friedman was correct when he thought that the velocity of money never changes and that maybe we just don't know how to measure money. And if we actually knew how to measure money, then velocity would be consistent. Right? So I can't remember. It was about a month ago. I can't remember the title of the video. But if you go through my YouTube channel, you'll find the video. And I go through and I show you how, if we were wrong on M2, that velocity going up in the 90s could have been constant. And if we got M2 wrong in the 2000s and 2010s, then velocity could have been the same there too. So you got to start with measuring money. And see, a lot of my videos, I can't go over all the details, or each video would be like 4 hours long. So sometimes I've got to use things generic. I got to use terms generically, like money printing or M2, or I've got to use that generically, because if I really got into the weeds on every single thing, like I said, I'd never get my point across, because I'd be there for 5 hours talking about it, because every single component has so much nuance to it. So I know it's tough. It's there's no ideal way to do it. There's no silver bullet or panacea for these whiteboard videos, unfortunately. I've just got to try to hope people watch as many as they as possible. So then you can kind of piece together all the detail and the nuance. But anyway, I don't want to go off on a tangent. That's what I'd think about as far as velocity. I'd think about what creates velocity and if we can even measure velocity well, if we can't measure M2 that well. What's the possibility of government confiscating gold? I mean, how do you put a probability on that? The best way I can answer that is we're going to know a lot more, I think, over the next 2 years. Why do I say that? Because I think over the next 2 years, we're really going to be transitioning, the governments are, into this central bank digital currency. You already see them talking about it. This is not tinfoil hat stuff. If you just Google it or look at it on YouTube, Jerome Powell was in a IMF Zoom meeting or whatever, talking about central bank digital currencies. Lagarde is talking about central, but they're all talking about central bank digital currencies because it solves a lot of their problems, or so they think. And I think it's just a matter of time. It's not an if question. It's a when question, like Rick Rule always says. So depending on where that goes, I think we're going to be able to judge what the probabilities are or if we should be concerned of them confiscating gold. And it's a moving target for sure, because there's so many variables from a political standpoint that you can't really game theory the whole thing right now. You've just got to be cognizant of that being a possibility. And the more we move toward this central planning and digital currency and banning cash, and you know, listen, I hate to take this thing back to the mask thing, but I started talking about the Cerveza sickness in January. Remember? And back then I was waving the flag saying, hey guys, you might want to pay attention to this thing in China. And they're all, you're a conspiracy theorist or blah, 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 blah. Even back then I was like, guys, I think the real danger here, it might not even be with the virus, but it's more so the government's response to it and us giving up so many civil liberties and freedom to the government that once they cross that line, you let them cross this line and they never go back. I mean, 9/11 is a great example of that. Look at this. We're still stuck with everything. This wasn't a temporary law. We've got FATCA now. We've got TSA. We've got the NSA. We've got all this craziness that came out of that, because once the government takes a certain degree of your personal freedom, they never give it back. They only take more. They don't have a reverse button. It's just forward, right? So if you think about how much personal freedom and liberty we've given up over the past 6 months, I mean, are we ever getting that back? I mean, if history is any indication, the answer would be no. So anyway, that's another reason why I think, you know, how can the next step not be a digital currency or a banning of cash? And then you take it to the next thing. Well, how can they not try to ban Bitcoin or gold or anything? It's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. So I don't think you should lose sleep over it now. I think you should just be cognizant of it. Understand what's going on. Pay attention, for everyone's sakes. It's like I always say, you got two choices. You got to be prepared or be a victim. It's up to you which one. So just be prepared. Just listen to what's going on, and then don't lose sleep over it. Don't stress out about it. But just every month or so, or every 6 months, just kind of reweigh what you think the probabilities are, and then make decisions accordingly. Yeah, so here's another good question. In your own personal view, do you believe the Fed will be able to be successful in their attempts to create inflation? I mean, I think they're already successful. You want to use that? I don't know if I'd use that word, but they've already achieved their inflation target of 2% plus. I think they just faux up the numbers on the CPI, and really it's running at 5-7%. So I think they've achieved those numbers. They just reworked the numbers to make it seem as though it's a lot lower than it really is. So I think they've already done it. Now, I guess another question would be, do I think they're going to be able to create enough inflation to bail out the government? You've got to think they're going to look at Japan and Europe and say, what did they do wrong? If they don't, they have to. I mean, they just have to. A third grader would do that. So they also have to understand that those bank reserves are getting locked up in the financial economy. And the only way to get around that is through government deficit spending. And that's also debatable, because the primary dealer banks could be buying that with cash. It's taking liquidity out of the system. I went back and forth just the other day with Brent Johnson, a good buddy of mine. You guys all know Brent. And this week, I told him I was going to try to do a video, because I've done so many inflation videos. I was going to try to do a video on if QE is deflationary. And I was going to argue, you know, how it could be. And so anyway, my point is that they've got to understand that. They've got to realize that it's all about compartmentalizing into buckets, just like we were talking about earlier with the real economy and getting just hyper-focused on deposits in the commercial banking system. And the best way to do that's MMT. Just shoot it directly in there. Get your Fed app on your phone. Everyone has an account. We see the Banking for All Act. We know that it's already here. I mean, it's not law yet, but they've introduced it. So we all have an account with the Fed. They give us our Fed bucks or Fed coins or whatever to our app every single month. And we have to spend it within 30 days. And if we don't spend it, poof, it's gone. That's the way that you increase the deposits. You turn bank reserves into legal tender, to use Dr. Lacey Hunt's phrase. And that's how you get the inflation. So you know, I can't even imagine that they don't realize that. Will they do it? I personally think the probabilities are it's kind of a timing issue. It's not a matter of if they do it. It's just a matter of when they do it. But that could be, I mean, who knows? That could be 5 years. That could be 5 months. You can never know the timing of these things. And you could never know if the dollar, I mean, Brent could be right. Brent's a smart dude. So is Steve. So obviously Snyder is. But I mean, all these guys are really, really smart guys. And, you know, we could see 140 on the DXY before everything just crashes. We could see a huge, if you guys listen to the interview that Grant Williams and Bill Fleckenstein did with Chris Cole the other day, that I've been suggesting everyone listen to. If you haven't, you have to listen to that episode. Just incredible, incredible. But all three of them kind of saw it as we get this big deflationary sucker punch, or gut punch, as they called it. And then, bam, the response to that is when we finally get the inflation genie finally gets out of the bottle. Okay, so Jackie, that's another good question, Jackie. So what state would I live in if I had to stay in the U.S.? Probably Florida. Probably Florida. The reason I say Florida is because you don't have state income tax and you have direct access to the Caribbean. So if it really, really hit the fan in the States, you could bug out to Cuba or Dominican or something like that. But you've got all those countries that are just a boat ride away. You don't even have to take an airplane. So they lock down the airports. And people always say, well, I live in Wyoming. That doesn't really affect me. Yeah, but you're landlocked. That's great. I'd far rather be in Wyoming than other places, or I'd far rather be in the mountains of Arizona than other places. But I would rather be to where I'm not landlocked, and I like the optionality. And so I'd have to think it through, but right off the top of my head, that's probably what I'd say. All right. And then let me clarify, because I know there's going to be some misconceptions about what I was saying at the top of the video with the whole mask thing. And my point there, I probably wasn't articulating it well because I just got off the plane from Vegas and I'm just smoking pissed about this, is that if you want to argue for personal liberty, if you want to argue, I would suggest, and it's up to you, but I would suggest not trying to argue from a standpoint of COVID being real. I don't think you're going to make any headway with your opposition if you have that argument, nor do I think you're going to make any headway with the opposition if you argue from a standpoint of, oh, COVID isn't that big of a deal, it's the flu. I think where you make ground, I think where the debate should really revolve around is, okay, what are our options? And what do those options mean? And is there an option where we reduce the amount of deaths? And if there isn't one, then we've got to focus on the other things, the personal freedom, the economy. And I think that that's where we need to have the discussion. So then you go, okay, well, let's look at the hospital capacity. Okay, great. Let's look at the hospital capacity. If we're not in jeopardy, then the only way that we can get, using their argument, you know, the only, or their data, the only way that we can get rid of this thing is if you get herd immunity or a vaccine. And a vaccine who knows? Maybe you get it, maybe you don't. You don't have a vaccine for the cold. So then you start doing this cost benefit analysis. And I think that's what I'd like the conversation to be about, a logical, rational cost benefit analysis. And let's stop doing things just because they make us feel good when they're utterly ridiculous. And what I'm referring to there specifically is when you're in a restaurant and you don't have to wear a mask, but yet you do walking to the bathroom. That's ridiculous. It you're not saving anybody. You're still breathing the same air when you're sitting down. It doesn't work that way. So anyway, let's make the debate about capacity. Let's make the debate about the cost benefit analysis if you never get a vaccine. And then let's just be realistic. If we go into a full lockdown for 6 weeks, you're not saving any lives. That doesn't work that way, because sooner or later those people are going to get infected. So you got two options. You've got vaccine or herd immunity. And if your only option is herd immunity, then you want to get to herd immunity as fast as you can. And in that case, when you go out to a nightclub in Vegas where everyone's healthy and 25 years old, you don't want them wearing a mask. You want them to get it. You know, keep the elderly and the people who are at risk. You suggest maybe, and it should be their decision again, you suggest that they stay home. But for the 20-somethings out there that are there without a mask anyway, for heaven's sakes. Jeez, just let them not social distance. Let them hit the dance floor. Let them get it. Let's just get up to herd immunity as fast as we can, as long as you're not overwhelming the hospital system there. That's the best, I'm not going to say that's the best strategy. I'm just going to say that that's what I think we should be talking about more than we are. It's just this argument of it's not real, or we should be on full lockdown for the rest of our lives. I don't think that's a productive debate at all. So anyway, that's all I've got to say about that. I just wanted to clarify. And I think it should be up to you. It should be, I'm not saying that masks are bad or they're good or any of that. What I am saying is it should be up to you. The government should not be involved with this. I don't need the government to tell me when to wear a mask or not. None of us do. That should be your decision for you and your family. So check out Rebel Capitalist Pro. It's the online community where you can hear me. I don't rant too much in there. Only when I get off a plane and I'm pissed off. But it's great. It's a great community. And you got Lynn Alden and Chris McIntosh, who are able to maintain their cool a lot better than I can. They're the pros. I'm the amateur. I'm the amateur. I'll readily admit that. But it's georgegammon.com/pro. And I want to thank, we got almost 1,300 people on to the end, which is probably like 100 more than we normally have. So I don't know. Maybe you guys like hearing me rant on about being pissed off about having to wear a mask on a plane when the guy next to me is doing 18 shots of vodka and doesn't wear a mask the whole stupid plane ride. And I can't even sleep for 5 minutes because I've got the mask on the bridge of my darn nose, for heaven's sakes, instead of all the way up my forehead. Anyway, all right, let's thank some people for being on here all the way to the end and dealing with my rant. I appreciate you guys bearing with me. I know you're here to listen to me answer questions, and I only answered about three questions. But Graham, thank you, my friend. Polygon, Robert, 8-Bit Madness, Clayton, History Person, Stacking, Scooby Snacks, Cece, Mighty Wolf, Daniel, Shane, David, Nick, Gabriel, Miguel, Wyatt, Kazia, Jackie, thank you. You had some great questions in there. Gabriel, Monica, David, speak your mind. Yes, please do, guys. We all need to stand up and speak our minds. We need to have that intellectually. We need to have a respectful, intellectually honest debate with people who agree with us, who don't agree with us, everyone. Okay, it's all about free speech. Jim, PJ, Ashley, Bloodbath McGrath, always here. Thanks for hanging out with me, buddy. John, Zabutify, we'll see you in the member forum here. Zabutify, Kevin, Bill, Attack Helicopter, Mr. Death Ray, Jose, Bravura, Media Company, Monica, Jeff, Jane, Ladies, Salvador, X3HG, Justin, History Person, Tony K, Nick. I think that's it, guys. Rigo, Mark Moss is here. Mark Mouse Moss in the house. Mark, did you hear that rant, buddy? Hopefully you'll appreciate that. I think Mark will. But anyway, text me on that on our next meetup, Mark. We'll figure that out. And I guess that's it, guys. I've ranted on. I got to hit the member live stream. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to the Rebel Capitalist Show. For more content like this, check out the Rebel Capitalist blog at georgegammon.com or go to the George Gammon YouTube channel.